At the top of the show, we were listening to some audio from the House floor yesterday. House members were asked to take off their congressional pins so that intruders would not be able to identify them. We got that audio via Michigan's 5th District Congressman Dan Kildee, a Democrat from Flint Township. He's one of the longer-serving members in Michigan's delegation and Chief Deputy Whip in the House. Congressman Kildee, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me back.
How are you and your staff?
We're doing okay. Mitchell Rivard, my chief of staff, was here yesterday. We were not together when this all happened, but he was able to get into a secure space. I went through this, you know, pretty harrowing experience, to be honest with you, but ultimately was able to get safe, and I'm a little bruised and a little sore, but otherwise feeling okay.
The video that I mentioned has been pretty widely shared on social media. Folks may be familiar with it. May I just ask what it was like to be told that you needed to make your congressional service as inconspicuous as possible because it might not be safe?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of a really bad 20 minutes or so where we felt like we were, you know, in, as it turns out, really were in much greater risk than we even knew at the time. I'm not afraid to admit it. I know I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what was going to happen. None of us knew. We could hear gunfire. There was, as it turns out, a person shot and killed right in our proximity at that very time. And the idea that we thought we could be overrun by, we didn't know how many people that were looking to cause mischief. And, you know, these are some of the same people, when you look at it, that, you know, stormed the Michigan Capitol once with guns. And some of them that, you know, ultimately were involved in this threat to our own governor. This is people all of the same ilk. And it was frightening. It's frightening for me personally. And I'm not afraid to admit it, like I said. But at the same time, I was frightened for our country, for our democracy, for things that we take for granted that have been proven to be much more delicate, much more precious than we maybe knew until yesterday.
What's the mood like in the Capitol today?
Pretty somber. Pretty somber. You know, we love this place. We love the democracy. We love what it stands for. And, you know, Mitchell and I were walking last night, actually very early this morning, through the Capitol. And it was only then that I realized the extent of what took place. It was obvious that not just a few dozen or a couple of hundred, but that thousands of people had invaded the Capitol. It was a mess. Furniture smashed, windows all broken, trash strewn all over, every office invaded. So we're all feeling that right now. We're feeling that this sort of violation of something that we feel is sacred. And it's not the buildings. It's what the buildings represent. And so we're reeling. I was glad we got back to work last night and finished the work that we set out to, that we talked about yesterday before all this happened. I was glad we got that done, but there's a lot of anxiety right now, a lot of concern.
Folks who are listening to us right now will not have heard this since Michigan Radio went straight to special coverage yesterday when things got heavy at the Capitol. But we did talk to you yesterday morning, and it was this discussion about the Electoral College certification. And as we were talking, we spoke about some of your Republican colleagues who wanted to vote no on the certification. And I asked you if you'd had conversations with Republican colleagues about this. Do you remember how you answered the question?
Not precisely, because it's been a bit of a blur, but I know the conversations that I've had and, you know, the frustrations that I've had with some of these members who honestly know better, but were not willing to contradict this, I don't know, this base that President Trump has whipped up, and that I thought it was a, and I feel even stronger now, that it was an act of cowardice that caused them, for the most part, to take the action they did.
I was thinking about what you said late last night when, as you say, the House vote finally came through and about 100 members of Congress still voted not to certify election results. That includes Michigan's Jack Bergman, Tim Walberg, and Lisa McClain. Was that a surprise to you that so many reps were still holding position on that?
It was a surprise because even in the Senate, while the vote was clearly lopsided, you know, originally we thought there'd be 13 senators. Half of those senators were so moved by what took place yesterday, they said, enough is enough. But it doesn't appear that any member of Congress changed their mind after that. And when we went back even to the debate, I was on the floor for the entirety of all the debate, with the exception of a few minutes. When we went back to the debate, I couldn't believe my ears. I couldn't believe these people were still spewing this stuff. The things that they know, some of them anyway, know are not true. They were still saying them because it was politically convenient for them to cling to this fantasy. And even after this, I couldn't believe it. And so, you know, I love people, and I love the diversity of thought that is manifest in this Congress. But from this day forward, I can't look at some of my colleagues the same way that I have in the past, where our differences are what makes us great. This is a different situation. And just to be clear, this was not Democrats and Republicans, because very many Republicans, in fact, some of the most conservative Republicans in the House, stood tall yesterday when they rejected this fantasy, and they will pay a political price for it. There were four Michigan Republicans that voted for the Constitution, for principle, and I'm usually not this way, but I'm not going to give a pass to my colleagues who chose political expediency over what was so obvious to any thinking human being to be the right thing. This isn't even a close call. This was fantasy, fabrication, confection, nonsense that was repeated. And the fact that they were willing to go along even after this horrible moment, to me, puts them on a list that they will stay on for the rest of their lives.
I want to return us to another thing that we talked about yesterday, and that's the question of how the United States prevents the country from backsliding into something less than a republic. We know that there were Michiganders among the crowd, including among a handful of those arrested yesterday. Where does the work begin at home in trying to restore faith in democracy?
I think it requires far more people to be engaged in the process and not be bystanders, because the people who represent this thinking are a very small minority. And I'm not talking about Trump supporters versus non-Trump supporters. There are people who supported President Trump for reasons that maybe they're reexamining now, but they don't represent this really deranged and disturbed group. So what I think has to happen is that people who have had the comfort of the sideline, not being involved, not having the difficult conversations, never talking about politics because, you know, it's uncomfortable and people get upset. We don't have the comfort or the luxury of people sitting on the sidelines. Every voice needs to speak up, because I think if that happens, these deranged voices become marginalized. And maybe, this is my hope, that provides space for the less courageous members of Congress to do the right thing, because they understand that that base is not the majority. That's not very kind or generous to these people, but right now I'm angry at them. They can't divorce themselves from responsibility when they have whipped up this challenge, when they have fanned these flames because they saw the benefit to themselves. And when it gets out of hand, in other words, when the fire they started begins to burn out of control, they can't say, well, you know, we're not responsible for that. No, they started the fire. They threw more fuel on the fire. They fanned those flames. And now that it has become a wildfire, they can't very, I think, honestly divorce themselves from responsibility for their participation in creating this in the first place.
You have said that you support removal of the president's post-haste, whether via the mechanisms of impeachment or the 25th Amendment, and not waiting two more weeks until Joe Biden's inauguration. Do you think there's a realistic possibility that a removal might happen?
I don't know, but I know it's completely impossible if we don't press and talk about it. And I think it's important that we do that because a lot can happen in 13 days. I had the worst 4 hours of my life yesterday. I shouldn't say it quite that way, but one of the worst times of my life yesterday, in only a space of a few hours. 13 days is a long time, given the proclivities of this president.
Well, is that conversation happening?
Yes, it is. And again, it will require the same kind of courage that some of my Republican colleagues showed yesterday to be manifest again, because as Democrats, we can't do it. And people kind of dismiss us because, you know, we have seen the folly and the fault of this president for a long time. So they kind of expect it from us. But it will take Mitch McConnell not just giving a good speech like he did yesterday, but being willing to translate that speech to real action that will protect this democracy by telling his Senate colleagues that we're going to move. You know, we could do this without a series of hearings. There could be a resolution on the floor of the House tomorrow to impeach the president for this. The Senate could take it up the next day, and he could be gone immediately. Now, will that happen? Not very likely, but it won't happen unless people call for it to happen, and Mitch McConnell needs to hear that. Likewise, the 25th Amendment would require the president's cabinet, or at least the majority of the cabinet and the vice president, to do something that will put them on the right list for American history. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But I know one thing for sure, because I'm not convinced that it can happen doesn't mean I shouldn't say that it should happen and try to encourage that conversation to continue.
Congressman Dan Kildee represents Michigan's 5th District. Congressman, thank you.
Thank you very much.